Kelman on CliffCentral.com.
There you go. All right. Hashtag Rainbow 16. What is the state of the Rainbow Nation in 2016?
Mm-hmm.
So every time that you're in, we kind of look at a different aspect of racism and race and, you know, the state of the Rainbow Nation in 2016. And it can range from land redistribution to white privilege to whatever it may be. Today, though, it is specifically white privilege. And just before we touch base with Quinton Bronckhorst,
mm-hmm.
Who is a journalist at Business Tech about what to do when you realize what white privilege is, let's get from you a definition of what white privilege is, Deshni.
So basically, it's, you know, this understanding that knowing that people who have always had a leg up benefit from having that leg up. So it's like, you know, I've always had two arms, so I can do things with two arms. But now someone who has one arm can't do all the things I can do. And I know that for that person to be on equal footing with me, I need to be able to accommodate them into my space, to know that if I continue to do things in the robust way that I do it with my two arms, in a space where it's not accommodating a one-arm person, I need to know that I need to show that person they're welcome. I need to know that I need to show that person that there's space for them and that they can do things just as efficiently as I do if they do it the way they do it, as opposed to me expecting them to do it the way I do it.
Mm.
Right? So in the white privilege definition, it's just knowing that white people benefit continuously from the system of having two arms in the metaphorical sense. You will continue to benefit no matter what. You're born into that privilege and you will always benefit from having a system in place that accommodates you to have jobs, that accommodates you to have homes, land, friends, you know, all sorts of things. Black people don't have that.
And it's a very difficult conversation to have with oneself as a white person, because it implies a very serious look in the mirror and a very honest conversation that you have to have with yourself, which I think is what Quinton's probably going to describe in detail as we touch base with him in a sec. Just walking into this conversation, though, for someone who is hesitant of a conversation like this, what would you make the disclaimer walking into this?
Just have an open mind. Have an open mind and don't be defensive. This is not an attack on a person. It is not an attack on a race. It is an attack on a system that is unfair and unequal. And if we all understand this, as the Rainbow Nation requires us to all live together, if we all understand that this is not an attack on a person, we will all be fine.
All right. And with that in mind, let's touch base with Quinton Bronckhorst, a journalist at Business Tech. Quinton, how's it going?
How are you guys doing?
Good, good. All right, Deshni, take it away.
Yeah, so the reason why I asked Quinton on is because Quinton and I have been friends for a very, 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 very long time. We've been friends since we were in varsity. And we had a little bit of a rough patch. What was it? About a year ago? 2 years ago or so?
Yeah, it was the beginning of the year when the Roads Must Fall movement started taking. Yeah.
Exactly. And we had a very big fight over Skype, which I warn everybody, please, if you're going to confront your issues with each other, don't do it on Skype or via a song that's a subtweet or between a big glass window between the two of you, just saying. But just do it basically in person so that you can get the point across properly. But luckily for me and Quinton, whose friendship is obviously blessed, we made it through and we're okay. And I've asked him to come on because I wanted him to talk about his experience, because when we did fight, I really thought he was never going to speak to me again. And I thought that he just thought I was the worst person ever.
Almost didn't.
Yeah, you know, and I'm thankful that he was able to keep an open mind, you know, because here we are. And I just want you to explain to people, maybe can you just say what you think white privilege is from a white person's point of view? And you're also a male. You're not in all the box ticked for privilege, but you've got everything, you know, you've got the maleness, you've got the whiteness, you're there. Can you please explain what this privilege is?
Oh, geez. You know, it's like you said, it's this, just the way society is basically formed around us to make sure that us as white people feel as comfortable as we are, you know, everywhere we go. It can be so complicated and so simple at the same time, because the way we understand privilege, we like to often look at privilege as a person to person thing. So I will look at myself and I'll go, okay, but that guy over there is more privilege than me for X, Y, and Z. Like, he's got a better job, he lives in a better house. So that's one way we understand privilege. The other way we understand privilege is on a much bigger scale. And that's what you touched on. The scale of basically all of society is structured to make white people feel a certain way and make black people feel a certain way. So, yeah, it can be as simple as or as complicated as you want it to be. but when we discuss it, when we confront it as white people, we need to basically start looking at the bigger picture.
Exactly that.
How are you confronting it in a personal capacity, Quentin?
It's going to sound completely like silly and ludicrously simple, but the best way to confront it on a personal basis is to actually stop and to start listening. Because what we do as white people, and this is exactly what happened last year with Deshni and I, is we insert ourselves into the center of everything. Because we live in a society where our opinions and our views and the way we live is at the forefront of our own lives. So I think it's human nature where we're all very selfish and we're very invested in our own views and our own opinions. But that's not always, you know, it's not always the reality of the situation. So what would happen is something would happen and then you as a white person, or let me rather say me as a white person, I would go in and go, but I don't understand this. Like this doesn't make sense to me because this is not how I live my life. So then you start questioning and you go, okay, but why don't they do this? And why doesn't this happen this way? And so you insert yourself into the center of the conversation when the conversation isn't really about you at all. So from a personal level, what you've got to do is you've got to step back and go, okay, wait, this isn't really about me. So let me rather listen to the people who it is about and try and gain understanding that way.
And I mean, this is very the point he's making about inserting yourself in the conversation was a very real example. Was this week or last week there was a student from WITS who's now going to face the Human Rights Commission after complaints about a T-shirt he was wearing. So at the back of the T-shirt it says "fuck whites," and the front of the T-shirt it says "being black is shit." He's going to the Human Rights Commission for the back of the T-shirt, obviously. He's not going to the Human Rights Commission for the front of the T-shirt. Because everyone knows and kind of accepts the fact that being black is shit. Or they're just like, well, that's not my problem. I don't need to deal with the fact that being black is shit in this country. But what everyone is upset about is the fuck whites. And when people think that it is... I mean, there was a Rand Daily Mail article today, which I even sent a tweet to correct because I was very upset about it. They wrote saying that the Fees Must Fall movement now has a movement in at WITS against white people. It's a campaign against white people, which is incorrect completely. Because if it was against white people, trust me, it would be a lot more visible than you think it is right now as against white people. So what they did is they just put themselves in the middle once again, as then they said, okay, this campaign is against white people and now I'm upset and actually this is wrong. When actually they didn't bother to step back and think, it's about the system of whiteness, it's about white as an idea. And it's about neoliberalism, capitalism, and all of these things that this entails.
There is a little bit of offense, though, that one can take from a T-shirt like that.
If one prefers to, sure.
I mean, it's a little bit offensive, right?
I don't know.
To say F white people, I don't know.
I don't know.
To me, it feels a little offensive. I don't know.
You see, to me, it's not. I don't. It's because I know what it means. I don't. If someone had, and you know, there's okay. Let me give you another example. Not that I should.
But why would one wear that? It just feels unnecessary.
Because it's about how the system was now. The Fees Must Fall system hasn't actually incorporated what they were looking for, and the financial exclusion of students is directly linked to race.
Because
if you understand class, you know that class is a race.
100%.
Exactly. So. That fight is not about fighting white people and getting rid of white people. It's about fighting whiteness. And whiteness is not a personal thing. It's an ideology. It's something that
exists. So that's what the T-shirt implies.
Yes. And yes, of course, you can't put whiteness everywhere. And the easiest way to say it is fuck whites. That's just how people say it. It's a very big difference, yes, if you're going to ask me. It's a very big difference to white people saying fuck blacks because we know what privilege is. We know that
so
in the system...
So when you spoke to this guy and why he wore that T-shirt, he said it's because of this.
No, I didn't speak to him.
Okay.
But this is what the system is. This is what the Fees Must Fall movement is about. It's about... Because there are white people in that system. There are white people in the Fees Must Fall system. There are white people wearing the T-shirt. In fact, Facebook friends of mine, photographers,
journalists... Oh, well, then it's a different spin. That's not what you hear in the headlines.
But obviously you won't, because...
See, I see someone wearing a T-shirt that says F whites, and it feels like... I mean, taken out of context, that's not a nice thing.
Yes, but then
it feels unnecessary.
But then you must interrogate why that happens.
Well, I don't even wear words on my T-shirt.
You know, that's fine. But there are people who want to... He made that T-shirt for a very specific reason.
Yeah, okay.
Quentin, you want to say something?
Yeah. Well, what I want to say is that's pretty much exactly the point. When somebody says something like that on a T-shirt, a white person reads it and then they feel personally attacked. They feel like, okay, so when you say fuck white people, you're saying, you know, fuck me in particular. And that's not really the case because, again, like Deshi says, it's attacking this concept, it's attacking this structure and this construct. Another point to make, and I've seen this raised on Twitter as well, like people are going like, oh, if a white guy had to wear a t-shirt saying fuck all the blacks, then whoa, then it's going to be like this huge thing. But what people don't realize is where these things are coming from. I mean, there's legitimate anger behind a statement like that. There's centuries of oppression that, and like keeping people down that's behind statements like that, like attacking this white capital and like the white structures of society and all those kinds of things. If a white person says that, if a white person says that about black people, it's not coming from any sort of structural basis. It's literally just coming from a point of hatred.
And not wanting to accommodate people into the space, you see. And that's a very important point to make, in that you need to understand the power your words hold. And this is why there's a difference between prejudice and racism.
Yeah, but, I mean, if we're talking about the power words hold, F whites is also not the greatest power. It's also just, you know, taken out of context, which I think a lot of people have taken it out of context. Because, I mean, I haven't spoken to the guy.
It's like a tweet on a T-shirt over there. Mm. And, I mean, that's... You see people all the time getting into trouble for saying what should be said in a, like, 600-word to 1,200-word article. They say in 140 characters with not enough nuance or anything surrounding it. So it's easy to misconstrue a lot of these things because there's obviously not enough time or space to explain the depth of everything that you're trying to convey.
Yeah.
Like Deshi said, it's like a simple, straight-to-the-point way of saying something.
Okay, look, the T-shirt one's going to be tricky for me because it's just tricky to get around the two words. But I do understand now with a little bit more context that there's a different message. And it would have been better if the media, I guess, had portrayed or discussed that message as well, because I just saw that and thought, like, that's not cool. Because I do actually believe in this white privilege thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's a serious thing that a lot of white people need to go through and to have honest conversations with themselves and not to be in denial over it. Because the first thing that you'll hear a white person say is, white privilege, does that mean that I haven't worked for what I have?
Mm.
You're taking away the fact that I studied the law degree. You're taking away the fact that I worked so hard to pass the accountancy exam.
Mm.
So it's almost like a bit of a personal attack.
Mm.
Yeah, making about yourself. But, I mean, that's what human beings do by nature.
Yeah.
Human beings make – that's what a selfie is. It's human nature.
And the point of understanding white privilege is to understand that it's actually not – human nature to make it about yourself all the time.
Yes.
Sometimes understand that you exist in a community. You must understand your community before you can take things personally.
Absolutely.
And this is a thing that, you know, not a lot of us have learned to deal with. And everyone is everyone is guilty of this. This is not just one group of people. It comes from one ideology that came from one group of people at some stage, yes. But these things perpetuate themselves for varied reasons. There are black people who buy into the fact that black people can be racist.
Mm.
So don't think it's not a personal attack. It's never a personal attack on one particular race or particular person. It is always about a systematic breaking down of the structure that doesn't accommodate us.
I think what's tricky, though, is that there is no remedy. So there's no way to say I have now sorted out my white privilege.
Mm.
It's an impossible thing to sort out, which makes it such a difficult discussion to even have. Because to what extent do you – what is it that you can do in order to – I don't know, eradicate, you can't eradicate it.
Quentin
it just is what
answer.
It is. Okay, Quentin, what's the answer?
You're right. It's not something that can be eradicated. It's not something that's going to just disappear by you acknowledging that it exists. At its core, acknowledging and understanding white privilege is understanding just basic human empathy. Like I said earlier, it's about stopping and listening and not dismissing other people's lived experiences or supplanting them with your own experience.
But do you think that that's good enough for someone that hasn't had opportunities based on the color of their skin and is previously disadvantaged that you have empathy? That's my question. Is that good enough for them? Not necessarily for you as a white person, but is that good enough for the person who feels oppressed? Because that, because I don't think that it is, and that's where I struggle with the whole thing.
But you must ask the people involved then.
Yeah,
you
can't ask a white person. It's not for me to say. Okay. It's not for me to say whether it's good enough. Because I'm just a white guy.
No, but that's what I'm saying. I'm saying if you have that empathy as a white person or whatever, I'm saying that it's not good enough to the person that was previously disadvantaged. I don't think that it is.
What would you do?
Well, I would ask a previously disadvantaged person that.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, and
I think we're arguing the same things here.
It is basically the same argument. Like you feel like we should do more, and we should do, you know, go out of our way to do all these different things. And I agree. There are ways that society at large needs to work towards, you know, breaking down these structures. But it's going to happen one person at a time. I mean, I don't know what your social circles look like, but I know when I'm amongst my white friends, for instance, you know, the same old subtle casual racism tropes come up. You're around people and, like, all these things – they say things and they assume just because you're white that you're, you know, you agree with what they're saying.
Yeah.
So what we need to do is we as white people who do understand this concept of white privilege and who are, I believe the term is woke, as they are using on Twitter. And it's up to us to now start spreading these, this understanding amongst our social circles and, you know, paying it forward in that kind of way. Because a lot of white people, what they do is they just expect black people or, you know, people of color to, you explain to me what white privilege is. You explain why I must do this. You do this. You do this. So we're still putting the burden on black people to constantly explain their lived experiences to us and to make sure that so just so we don't dismiss it. So that's not really it. That's not on, because it's not their responsibility to do it. It's our responsibility to do it.
Absolutely. That's a very valid point.
They've been doing this for the past 200 years. And now suddenly, because this concept of white privilege is in the public domain and now everybody's talking about it, now, only now are white people joining this discussion.
So what,
and now we step in and going, oh, now everyone needs to explain this to me.
So what?
No, it doesn't work like that.
So what do we do to inspire that internal conversation? Because it can't come from external sources, you're right. So what does one do to inspire that internal conversation?
This is the tricky part. What this requires is, and this is always the problem when it comes to these kinds of things, it requires a buy-in from white people. So white people need to be willing to actually take this journey, because in the end, it's up to each individual person to look at themselves in the mirror and to start questioning their own opinions, their own thought processes, and their own place in, you know, in greater society. And that is an incredibly difficult thing to do. I mean, like Deshin said earlier, her and I, we almost didn't speak for a while because it took me a long time to actually get over myself. Because nobody likes hearing that your opinion doesn't matter. And that's ultimately what's happening. Because white people enter every conversation with this thought of, like, oh, I've got an opinion and everyone needs to hear my opinion, whether you like it or not. Mm. And that's true. Everyone's allowed to have their opinion. Everyone's allowed to express that opinion. But don't ever make the mistake of thinking that your opinion is one, the opinion and the only opinion. And also that other people have to listen and abide by your opinion. And that's something incredibly difficult to get over. So, yeah, it requires a buy-in from people.
You see, and this is where, and usually Deshni is the voice of doom and gloom. But in this case, like, I have to, I mean, so, you know, people that are in relationships, it's difficult for them to admit that they might be difficult to their husband or they might be difficult to their wife, which is what makes this almost, like, when you start really decoding it, feel a little bit insurmountable, because even on a level of, like, a relationship between a man and a woman or whatever, it's difficult for her to even admit that she maybe snores a lot at night. Like, it's something on that degree. And so on this degree, it's very, very difficult. So I don't want to be the disillusioned one here, or that it's usually Deshni that's telling me this Rainbow Nation thing is bullshit. But in this case, and I'm really honestly asking, like, how do we just get people to get that real with themselves, like, in a tangible way? And is that whose responsibility is that? Is that their responsibility? Is that white people's responsibility? Is that whose responsibility is that?
I think it's your and my responsibility. So let's first start off by us as individuals.
In a personal, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
To firstly understand our position in these kinds of things. Then it's up to us to pay that forward to the next level. So around your family and your friends,
yeah,
and to start having these conversations, because you know just as well as I do what kind of conversations go around behind closed doors. You know, when people think that everyone's down to make the odd racist joke here and there, and you know, and it's all good fun, ha ha ha. But there needs to come a point where you go like, okay, yeah, but this isn't really, it's not really funny, it's not really on, it's actually boring, old and tired now. So you know, it's like just to approach the people closest to you first of all, and get them to understand on the same sort of level that you do.
And I think one of the most important things also to note here is that it's really important to be brave. If you're going to, like Quentin said, if you're going to embark on this journey, you can't stop in the middle. If you're going in it, you're going in it. It's over for you.
That and means, a lot of people are not going to be happy with you. That's for sure. And I think Desi can attest to it more than anyone else. You really do stand to lose a lot of friends because a lot of people aren't ready to take this sort of journey.
And it even happens with your family. You eventually, I mean, I don't know if you remember, Ari, but I told you at some stage, one day you're going to be called a self-hating white, you know.
Yeah.
This is going to happen to you. Because this is what happens when people don't want to admit that there's a problem. And that actually, they're more of the problem in the bigger scheme of things than anyone else, actually. So no one is willing to hear that. And that's the truth. It is, no one wants to hear that there's a problem with themselves and the way they think. And it... And remember that even black people have to unlearn these problematic ideas of being part of the system. So we didn't just wake up one day and suddenly realize, oh, wait, actually, this is all wrong. We had to unlearn a lot of things. So the system is made up in such a way that it will keep you down. Trust me. We had to learn on our own that what it means to be black. And then, like, if you can just understand the amount of learning that you do at school, then you've got to unlearn all of that because you know, like, you know, personally, there's a whole new change that happens. Then you've got to relearn who you are as a person once again. It's never easy. And that's basically what white people need to do. You need to go through the same process we go through. That's what needs to happen.
It's a... yeah, it's a loaded one. I mean, Quentin, it's amazing that in, you know, a short period of time, you've repositioned your take on it, because it seems like it's something that actually takes a long amount of time to recondition almost one's entire thinking.
It does help to have people around you who have different views to you. Because
that's the most important thing in life in general. Outside of just to be a good person, you need people that have different views. Even if it's on, they like a different color to what you do in terms of to what gelato they like. Like it's important to have people that disagree with you on every front. Not just on a race front, but on a philosophy front, on a career front, on every single front.
Yeah,
that's important.
Yeah, no, that's true. And just so everyone knows, I mean, the reason why I asked Quentin to come is because these are conversations that I really believe need to happen between white people. Conversations about privilege and about what happens between white people need to happen with white people. I'm taking a step back because, you know, usually I'm kind of in there and always just shutting people down. The reason why I'm stepping back is because it's so important for white people to have these conversations between themselves. And for black people, we just need to leave them. Like, don't try. We can't keep telling them what to do. We can tell them once and we can hope for the best. And we can move on after that. And if we're really invested in this person, we can try one more time. But at the end of the day, the conversation needs to happen between white people, about white people. And you guys need to see from there where you plan on going with that. You know, that's the most important thing.
Quentin, what is the state of the Rainbow Nation in 2016?
Ooh, wow, that is like a loaded question. Do we even have enough time for that?
Let's try.
I am ever the optimist. So I feel that if someone like me can, you know, at least start changing the way they think and start seeing new ideas and new perspectives in life, that it's possible for everyone. So I've seen the changes slowly within my own social circles, within my own family. So I think that it's going to be an interesting year because it's an election year, but that's like all political stuff. And yeah, I'm optimistic about it. I think socially these conversations are going to start happening more and more. It's going to take a lot of time for people's minds to change, if it ever will, because who knows? if I know one thing is that white people are very stubborn when it comes to their opinions. But I think there will be definite changes in the positive when it comes to these kinds of conversations. But I also see there's going to be a lot of polarization, and I've also seen that as well. So yeah, we'll have to see where it goes. But I'm optimistic.
Yeah, and just as long as, I don't know, everyone listens to what other people have to say. That's the first step.
Yeah,
and
I mean, that's the important part. Look, I'm actually just listening.
I mean, I'm hesitant also to even say that because I don't even think you should listen to what Penny Sparrow has to say. But
I would rather have Penny Sparrow say what she has to say so that I can identify that type of thinking is out there. Because remember, those kinds of discussions happen behind closed doors all the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, listen, that's actually another story for how personally you navigate what you do and what you don't hear and what you do and don't take in. Because at some point, I do believe that you just have to, other people have to figure it out for themselves. Like we've had this conversation now that white people need to figure it out for themselves. Like extremists and that kind of thing on any front, whether it's a religious front, a race front. Like at some point, you just have to say, cool, go be in your corner because there's actually nothing that you can do there to rehabilitate it. So it's, in my perspective, listening within the confines of what you deem acceptable and just and actually worthwhile, that there's some positive that can come out of it. Because sometimes there isn't positive that can come out of it, if we're being honest.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, if there's one thing for you to take out of this, is that white people listening to white people and understanding what white privilege is core for this Rainbow Nation to actually work. If you want people to start the reconciliation process, you're going to have to get people to actually identify that something went wrong and that it needs to be addressed. So actually, if you want to know what to be done, you need to get white people to buy in so that you can have the rainbow you're looking for.
Yeah.
There you go.
I think with the whole Rainbow Nation thing is that white people didn't really buy into it as much as they felt they were forced into it. So, you know, everything came about and like, here we go, this is the new South Africa, you know, take it or leave it kind of thing. And this discussion that we're having now, this discussion about where does whiteness fit into this whole picture was never really had. And now we're starting to have that discussion. And I think that can only be positive.
Absolutely. Well, look, we aren't going to speak for the entire white population because some people maybe did and some people maybe didn't. Majority probably didn't. But, you know, let's not generalize as we wrap it up. Quinton, how do we keep up with you all day?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter. It's Cornea, Q-O-R-N-E-A. Or you can just click on to businesstech.co.za today. We often cover a lot of business, finance, and some politically slanted news as well.
Fantastic. Dude, thank you very much for hanging out. That's Quinton Bronkhorst there, a journalist at Business Tech. Deshni, land the plane.
Okay, well, that's that. Yeah, thank you for that conversation. And I really appreciate the fact that, you know, white people can have this conversation in public also, because that's not the easiest thing to do. So thank you very much. And the state of the Rainbow Nation is Ari.
You see, some days I feel more despondent than others. I don't know.
It's the rain. Pretend there's no rain. There's just bright sun. There are no sinus issues. There have been no fights with your producer. Everything is okay.
Everything's okay.
What's the state of the Rainbow Nation?
The state of the Rainbow Nation is that there's still a hell of a lot of work to do.
Okay.
That's what it is. Yep. All right, we'll do this all again tomorrow between 4 and 6. Deshni, thank you so much. It's at DShroom on Twitter. The Gareth Cliff Show is next. Kelman on CliffCentral.com.